The ceremony is called Diksha, first initiation. So I'll just, three things, I'll explain my understanding of it. Number two, the 10 offenses. And number three, we have the giving the names. So from what I understand is that Diksha comes from the, well, we call it first initiation. So it's not exactly the beginning of spiritual life, but it's beginning of the acceptance, we could say, of spiritual life. The material world means that we're living according to our false ego. And spiritual world means that we're living according to Krishna's directions. Specifically, Krishna's within our heart as a super soul, but we may not hear perfectly his direction. Therefore, he also appears externally as Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra in order to give us the same information he's giving us within the heart. So initiation means that we've decided to give up our false ego, or at least take to the process by which our false ego is given up. And instead of thinking ourselves to be this body and things in relation to this body, we think ourselves to be the servant to the servant. We want to develop the awareness by practical activities of how we're the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. And the perfection of that is that we enter into our spiritual identity and our spiritual body and our spiritual existence, and we begin actual life as it's supposed to be lived, existence. So there are so many, in everyone's heart there is Krishna, and all devotees to one degree or another are representing Krishna, are repeating the same message as Krishna. But there may be different understandings because there are different levels of experience in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, we accept a spiritual master, not that he's necessarily even a master in the science of Krishna consciousness, but at least he's giving the same instructions that Krishna gave 5,000 years ago to Arjuna. So what we're actually becoming initiated into is the disciplic succession, both the knowledge and the example given by our predecessor acharyas. And of all of those, we have our particular time, place, and circumstances that we have to act according to, and therefore we're given help by Guru, by Sadhu, and Shastra, so that whatever we're doing is in line with Krishna. And being in line with Krishna, the result is that Krishna should be pleased and we should remember Krishna. That's called Krishna consciousness. So our vast amount of knowledge basically explains that everything here belongs to Krishna and therefore is meant for Krishna's service. And Guru, Sadhana, and Shastra, and the Super Soul within our heart help us understand how to perform that service to Krishna under all circumstances. Pundarikaksham, yaksmarad pundarikaksham, so we can remember Krishna always. That way we become pure. So there are two different levels of activity, one with our body, or three. One with our body, one with our mind, and with our words. So generally speaking, we try to act in the mode of goodness. Because the mode of goodness is the jumping point to transcendence. So with our body, we try to act. Pure goodness is devotional activities. But in any case, we try to do even devotional activities in the mode of goodness. Cleanliness, truthfulness, austerity, theoretically implied knowledge, like the brahminical consciousness. Samadhamma tapasocham shantir arjvam evacha jnana vijnanam asikyam brahma karma sabhavajam. We try to act in goodness and we try to do things according to the directions of Guru, Sadhana, and Shastra, and the ultimate purpose is to please Krishna. We want Krishna to be satisfied, and especially Krishna will be satisfied when he sees that we're doing what's necessary to become Krishna conscious, and we're helping others become Krishna conscious too. Krishna wants everyone to go back to the spiritual world, although not everyone wants to go back to the spiritual world. He wants everyone to go to the spiritual world. And therefore, our service here is simply to assist him in helping bring his other children back to the spiritual world, of which we happen to be one of them. So we can't bring anyone else back, at least we should bring ourselves back. So initiation means that when we're taking a vow to chant 16 rounds offenselessly, so it's not just chanting 16 rounds, because that's nice, that's all we can do, somehow or another, but we should try to do it offenselessly. Otherwise, we can, as it says, Bahu Janma Kari Shravana Kirtana, we can go on chanting for millions of lifetimes, but we won't get the love of God, which is the goal. In conditioned life, we may have different levels of experience, both of material existence and of the spiritual existence. But at least it's advertised that spiritual existence is quite blissful, whatever that means. And it has unimaginable pleasure that we also may not be able to understand at our present time. But all we know is that it's something which is better than what our present existence. And at the stage of sadhana bhakti, at least it gives us a higher taste than we can experience in the material world. Material world means taste. We're all looking for taste, mainly by eating, because we can, at least as devotees, it's probably the most direct taste we can get from material existence and still follow the regular principles. And then there's sleeping. And then there's mating, and then there's defending. So this is material existence. And it's not denied in Krishna consciousness, it's just regulated. But it's hopefully regulated in such a way as that by developing a taste, higher consciousness, then also our eating, sleeping, mating, defending gets elevated to the mode of goodness. And ultimately, even when we're eating, sleeping, or even mating or defending, we're still in transcendence. Of course, we should practice whatever mode of material nature we're eating in, or sleeping, or mating and defending. We should practice trying to be doing it for Krishna consciousness, and that's what elevates us. It's not simply eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, or even eating prasadam, or sleeping in the temple, or even mating to have children, or defending ourselves against illusion. That doesn't necessarily elevate us. It's trying to do it in Krishna consciousness. It's trying to do it in the consciousness that everything here is meant for Krishna service, because he's the controller and owner of everything. And we should do it under proper direction. We should become convinced before we do something that this is what Krishna wants us to do. And we should do it to please Krishna. That means we should do it with care and attention in a way that we'd want to be served, or we should be serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's all attractive. So, there are 10 offenses in chanting in the holy name. The first offense is to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives in propagation of the holy name of the Lord. Spiritual world is simply relationships. There's nothing else going on but loving relationships. And the material world means that there's nothing else going on except for envious relationships. envious, of course, in the mode of goodness, the Brahmins are less envious. But only devotees are actually free from envy, the real devotees. Therefore, we should understand, as conditioned souls, we need practice in how to act as, at least on the Madhyama Adhikari platform, in our relationships. That is, Prabhupada said that your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate to keep this movement together after my disappearance. So though we automatically, when we look at anyone in the material world, because material world also means flooded with conditioned memories. And spiritual world means there are no more conditioned memories, there's spiritual awareness. So because we're conditioned souls, therefore, spontaneously, there's going to be reactions. Whoever we meet, we're going to have some reaction. We're going to like them to some degree. We're going to dislike them to some degree. We're going to have all kinds of speculations. Material world is quite complicated in the relationships. But we have to practice. We follow the regular principles and try to fix our mind upon Krishna. Then there's more likelihood that we'll see others in relationship to Krishna and see ourselves as their servants rather than as an opportunity to try to become their master. Or at least get them to do something that we want them to do, or for them not to do something we don't want them to do. So it's more likely if we're in Krishna consciousness, we can modify our relationships in such a way as we can tolerate and appreciate. Accept and appreciate. First step is to acceptance. Generally speaking, even we have people coming from the same country, if we meet them abroad, then we accept them. How wonderful it is that you're in the same place as I am. But when we meet them in the same city, they're just ordinary. And then we discriminate. You know, which block do you live on? Or you live on the same block? Or is there one story? One man met someone in a foreign country, Africa. And he said, where are you from? He said, I'm from England. Oh, really? I'm from England too. Amazing. And then he said, what part of England? I'm from Shefford. Well, I'm also from Shefford. That's amazing. What church do you belong to? Oh, I belong to the First Baptist Church. I also belong to the First Baptist Church. Which part of the First Baptist Church do you belong to? I belong to the Reformation of 1876. Well, I belong to the Reformation of 1896. You're a renegade. He takes out his gun, shoots him. So somehow or another we'll find out there's something that's different that makes you less than I am, a renegade, a heretic, whatever. So this is all material life. Material life means that there's impersonalism and there is materialism. Personalism, we see everyone as the same, all women are the same, all men are the same. And materialism is this particular one I want to exploit. So that's called conditioned life. But we have to learn how to reciprocate with the devotees and learn to accept them, just the fact that they're engaged in Krishna service. We should understand that what we see manifested is the internal energy of Krishna. It's not the material energy of Krishna, because the material energy of Krishna does not perform devotional service to Krishna or even attempt to. Material energy of Krishna just inspires us to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. And the spiritual energy inspires us to try to do something for Krishna under the spiritual energy. So devotees are chanting, Sadatam kirtayanto mam yatantas chadrita vrataha namasyantas chamam bhaktya nityukta upasate. That those who are always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these devotees, they perpetually worship me with devotion. So we see devotees, especially if they're regularly chanting, if they're determined to, they're steadily engaged to one degree or another in Krishna's service, and they're humble. They don't think that they're Krishna. They think that they're servants to the servants of Krishna. Then we have to accept them. They may not look like us. They may not talk like us. They may not do like us. They may have even different ideas. But still we should try to accept them because they're engaged in Krishna's service. And we should try to appreciate how they're engaged in Krishna's service. That will be our spiritual advancement. So, Trinada Pisanicha na Triva Sahishnuna Amanana Madhana Kirtini Eksadari. Humility means to see things in relation to Krishna, sees things that were the eternal servants of the servants of Krishna, and then to tolerate, to accept others, even though they may seem to be being different service than I'm doing, but still they're doing service to Krishna. And then appreciate. If we go back to the spiritual world and we were gopis, or Krishna is in the mood of parental affection, it's not that the gopis think that Mother Jasoda is useless. She doesn't know how to dance. She hardly sings, she only sings her own hymns for Krishna. But we're actually in the rasa dance, and she's just cooking all the time. No, they don't think like that at all. They appreciate Mother Jasoda. Mother Jasoda appreciates the gopis. The coward boys, there's only appreciation of everyone's service. And the more we appreciate, then the more we become blissful, the spiritual, the more Krishna is pleased. Then we can give up the dhanam, janam, sindarim, and other things that motivate us in the material world as the reasons why we're doing everything, and instead try to take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. Second offense is to consider the names of the demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma to be equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. So there are so many persons who we admire in the material world. As I've often said, everyone, as Prabhupada said, we're all ghostly haunted. We've accepted so many leaders since time immemorial, and we've been following them in all the different modes of material nature. And now we may have our own set of leaders in this lifetime that we were brought up with from our childhood. Music stars, rock actresses and actors, sports people, politicians, academians. So many people we take as our examples and leaders, and we're ghostly haunted by them. We're not even conscious of the fact that we're following their instructions and their example. But this has just been, we've assimilated it. So it's become part of our nature. So now we have to understand that Krishna is the highest nature. Krishna is the supreme. When they say Brahma and Shiva, we don't know about Brahma and Shiva. Probably none of us in our childhood. Were you taught to worship Brahma and Shiva in your childhood? Nityaseva? Did you believe in Brahma and Shiva when you were younger? What's that?
Not so much.
No. Even in India, it's not so. I mean, they may be on the altar. They may be one of the gods, but who they are, who knows what they are. What's that? Lord Shiva, of course, he's probably more popular than Brahma because Brahma, of course, he has three eyes. And I guess that's not so bad as having four heads. But Shiva gives benediction, so people sometimes, probably more of the villages than in Delhi, they worship Shiva to get a good husband. Or they worship Parvati or someone, Uma, to get a good wife. But generally in the cities, they're more agnostic. They're, yes?
My cousin, she worshipped Lord Shiva to get a husband, and she did actually get.
She did get?
She did get, yeah.
Why not? Well, there's so many people around that Lord Shiva could send. especially in Delhi. It's not hard to find some. It doesn't take Lord Shiva very much, you know. Ashutosh. But we should understand how nice, how great, how wonderful Krishna is. Try to take him, add him onto the leadership. The people who are trying to follow, and the people who are following Krishna, how to get them, add them onto our leadership, and then the other leaderships we'll see an insignificant comparison. But we should accept Krishna as the supreme, above anyone else. And therefore, when we become attracted to others, we should understand, but ultimately Krishna is, he's the beauty, he's the strength in people, he's the intelligence, he's the ability. Everything we're seeing that we're attracted to actually comes from Krishna. Third offense is to minimize or disobey the orders of the spiritual master. The orders of blessing the Vedic literature, literature in pursuance of the Vedic version. I always get those two. Which one is it?
The spiritual master.
The spiritual master, I'm saying. So, the spiritual master, everyone's, in conditioned life, everyone seems ordinary. What to speak of the spiritual master? Unless we have, he's someone like Srila Prabhupada, who's actually situated in transcendence, and somehow or another, some devotees, not all the devotees, not all people, when they came in contact with Prabhupada, they experienced some transcendence, something completely outside of material existence. And therefore, at least temporarily, they accepted Prabhupada as someone extraordinary. Not because he was big and powerful, because actually they were amazed how small he was, and at the same time how powerful he was because of that spiritual energy. In any case, it's not that everyone, I mean, I saw many devotees, followers of Prabhupada, couldn't understand Prabhupada's exalted position, nor could I completely understand it, but I had some experience, so I could understand that he was in whatever the spiritual world is, at least I could understand part of it. In any case, what makes the spiritual master extraordinary is that as everyone else who's trying to repeat Krishna's message, he's also repeating it. So that's pretty extraordinary. That anyone in this world is repeating Krishna's message. If you go out in the street, there are approximately 2 million people in Slovenia. How many people are repeating Krishna's message on the street? You know? So out of maybe there's a few hundred devotees repeating Krishna's message sometimes in Slovenia. So that's quite extraordinary. So we accept the spiritual master, not because he's extraordinary, he can stand on his little finger, or he knows every verse in the Vedas or whatever else. He sings like a Gandharva, he cooks like Radharani, therefore we accept him. No, we accept the instructions coming down into simple succession, and we also should see the example that he's also engaged in Krishna's service, and he's teaching us how to come to the platform of properly discriminating how we can accept and appreciate and serve all the other devotees appropriately, so that ultimately we can fall in love not only with Krishna, but with all his representatives, which means all his devotees. We can all serve them appropriately. And if we think the spiritual master is an ordinary person, and we treat him like an ordinary, then charimam vijaniyam nava manyate karichit. No, nimartyas suya buddhyeta sarvadeva maya guru. That one should never think the spiritual master is an ordinary person. Otherwise, well, actually it says first we reject Krishna and then we reject the spiritual master, generally speaking. First we decide that we're not going to serve Krishna, and then we start criticizing the spiritual master, because unless we do that, we can't reject Krishna and then serve the spiritual master. It's not really possible. So, of course, we're trying to accept Krishna, and we're also trying to accept the spiritual master. We're trying to accept the process of devotional service, which means to accept their example, the good example, and accept the good instructions they're giving us and try to apply them in our lives so we make spiritual advancement. Otherwise, it doesn't mean we can formally, like this ceremony is to accept the spiritual master, but unless we actually follow his instructions and apply them within our lives and do service, that's what service means. It means we've accepted superficially, but not very deeply. And therefore, we're already in Maya, under the clutches of the illusory energy. And therefore, Maya will say, everything's all right, you got initiated, your sinful reactions are taken away, everything's cool, now just go back to your normal life again. It's cool. You'll be protected. The worst that's going to happen to you is you'll come back, go to the heavenly planets, enjoy for a few hundred million years. So don't worry about anything. Just enjoy. That's not a good idea. The fourth offense is the blasphemy of the Vedic literature, literature in pursuance of the Vedic version. The Vedas have so much, there's like a billion verses in the Vedas. Srila Rupa Goswami has given us just some of them, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and our other literatures, Krishnadas Kaviraj. So we don't have to understand everything at once. As a matter of fact, we can hardly understand anything, but to speak of everything. Even the first instruction, we're not this body. We have to be constantly reminded of. Otherwise, we forget that too. But we should read the Vedic literature and not either blindly accept it nor blindly reject it, because practically all of it, or most of it, is beyond our comprehension. Therefore, Krishna says the best knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita is the three modes, because that we can see pretty easily. We can understand when we're asleep, we're probably in ignorance, because we can't even remember our false ego when we're asleep, our present false ego. We can understand when we're in passion, when we eat too much. It's also ignorance, though. Passion means we want the nicest food. We want the best place to sleep. And we can understand when we're in goodness, when we walk into the temple and we put on our halo, we laugh at the jokes and we say, that's interesting philosophy. So that we can understand. We can understand how we're switching from one mode to the next. So that's but there's some other knowledge in Bhagavad Gita also. And ultimately it says that we can actually transcend, we can come to a higher mode of nature through the process of devotional service, acting as a Madhyama Adhikara in the intermediate program. Devotional service means for us trying to love Krishna, trying to serve Krishna without motivation, try to make friends, how to have a nice relationship with the devotees, to help them become Krishna conscious. Try to help the innocent people to understand their relationship with Krishna in some way. And try to avoid people who are going to take us away from Krishna, away from Krishna consciousness. So we have to act in that way. And that's what that part of the Prabhupada's scriptures that he's given us, those instructions, we should find something that suits me at the present time, that it can apply within my life. And the other thing is we can read. We don't accept them. We don't reject them blindly. We just wait for the realizations that one day we may be able to apply some of this other knowledge. But take the knowledge that we can understand easily and apply easily within our lives and try to work on it to bring ourselves out of ignorance to passion, to goodness. And then transcendence, Krishna consciousness, becomes more experienced when we're practicing it. The next two offenses are to consider the names, to give some interpretation of the holy name of the Lord, or consider it imagination. That we can only experience by Krishna's mercy, because Krishna and his name are non-different. He'll reveal himself when he wants to, when he sees we're sincere. Sincere means that there's a process of becoming sincere. You can read about it in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, text 34. Process of becoming sincere. It consists of submissive inquiries and service. So If we're not feeling submissive, we have some work to do. We're not inquisitive, we have some work to do. And we don't do service, the gaps in our service, we have some work to do. And therefore the knowledge we're being given is specifically for that. That's what we should be interested in. Blind, following, and absurd inquiries are condemned. One should not only hear submissively, but one should get a clear understanding through submission, service, and inquiry. So we want clarity. We want to become purified. We want to experience Krishna. There's nothing but Krishna. There's nothing but the spiritual energy. So we want to come to that platform where everything is seen in relation to Krishna, everyone and everything. But, as Prabhupada writes also in that same purport, one has to pass the test of the spiritual master. And when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. So material existence means a test, but spiritual existence also means testing. So we may think we know something, but that has to be tested. And if we don't completely pass the test when we're given, then at least it should inspire us, it should awaken us a little bit of humility, so that we try a little bit harder to become more submissive, more inquisitive, and to render better service. So when the student is always submissive and is ready to render service, then the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. So when the student is always submissive and is ready to render service, and at the same time the aim is to understand everything properly, then the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. So we have to take to this process, and then gradually the holy name will reveal himself. So of all the processes we're doing, chanting 16 rounds and paying attention and avoiding these other offenses, if we don't have a nice relation with the devotees, it's going to affect our chanting. If we don't have a proper relation with the spiritual master or the other devotees don't have a proper relation with the other devotees, that will affect our chanting. If we don't understand, we don't read the books, Prabhupada, and try to apply it within our lives, that will affect our chanting. If we commit sin on the strength of chanting, that will affect our chanting, etc., etc. So these offenses will affect our chanting. And so when we sit down and chant, then we'll have a hard time chanting and even hearing the holy name, because our minds will go to different places. So we should try, pay attention, and that should serve as an impetus to try to avoid the other offenses too. It's not that we could pay attention and have the offenses and commit offenses. No, we have to try to pay attention and try to see. We can even observe where our minds are wandering to and understand that's a product of our offenses. Our mind wouldn't wander unless to some other place, unless at least we had a taste for it. And of course our mind may wander. The question is whether we're going to wander along with the mind. The mind may wander anywhere, but it doesn't mean we have to go with it. The mind says, come with me. This chanting is so boring. You go, yeah, sure. Wow. Wait a second. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Aren't you bored? Yes. Do something more exciting. Wow. Look at that. Look at your imagination. It's actually become so more powerful now that you've been chanting, and now you can really enjoy on the subtle platform. Before, you hardly could enjoy on that platform, but now you've been empowered to do it. Bless the holy name. Oh, we have to. Combination of avoiding the offenses and especially paying attention. Then we'll actually experience the holy name. We'll be able to experience Krishna's presence, Srimati Radharani's presence. And it'll get deeper and deeper and deeper. And one day we'll be in the spiritual world wherever we are. If we enter into the spiritual world in this world, in our heart, then we'll be everywhere, externally and internally. Then we'll be living in the spiritual world, actually. Although it appears that we're living here, but actually we ourselves, the soul, enter into the spiritual world, even in this lifetime. And though it may appear that we're living here, but actually that's not where we're living. The next offense is to commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name. Maya will always try to trick us, saying, relax, you've been working too hard, you need a vacation, and I have a perfect one for you. Just the one you always were wanting. Before you were disqualified, but now that you've become a great devotee, I have a special Maya that I'm going to give you, a special opportunity. And it goes on, it's a purificatory process. Maya will always try to lure us, and sometimes we might become a lord, but hopefully we'll understand that this is not exactly what we're looking for. And therefore, try to take shelter again with Krishna, try more sincerely. Eighth offense is to consider the chanting of Hare Krishna to be one of the auspicious ritualistic activities or from the Vedas as fruit of activities or karma kanda. So even legally, one can follow the karma kanda, jnana kanda, Upanishads, whatever. And there is benefit, materially speaking. Instead of getting one drop in the desert, you get two or three if you follow the process. But compared to Krishna consciousness, it's all insignificant. But that we have to develop faith in gradually, by experience. So much theoretical knowledge about how wonderful devotional service is, but it's theoretical until we experience it. Until we experience it, we're still attached to the other things, because by nature, we're pleasure-seeking. Krishna is pleasure-seeking, and we're also pleasure-seeking. So that's always going to be there until we get a higher pleasure, and that will develop after some time of sincere devotional service and experience. In the meantime, we don't even know about the karma kanda. We're just trying to get some nice prasadam. We're not necessarily lured by the karma kanda, but nice prasadam also is temporary. And all these other things that modern society allures us with is also temporary. And it's not even karma kanda, what to speak of. We even started to study that book and apply it, which we probably can't. We wouldn't even understand what it's all about. We wouldn't have the ability to apply it. In any case, we should understand, except for Krishna consciousness, everything is insignificant and temporary. And therefore we accept it. Yes, we're here, we're experiencing so many insignificant temporary things, but I should at least be interested in trying to obtain something which is eternal, which was Maharaj Shabde say, Nanyam Deho Deha Bhajam Riloke Kastan Kaman Arate Vidbu Dyamye Tapo Divyam Putuka Yena Sadvam Shudyat Tasmai Brahma Sokyam Tunam Dham. That happiness which is everlasting, which is unlimited, everlasting, that we should strive for. Even the promise of it, we should try to do something to even hopefully experience a fraction of a drop of the ocean of that, so that at least we have a compass where we should be going. We have some direction to go in. And the ninth offense is to preach the holy name to the unfaithful. In other words, we should use our intelligence and try to understand how to speak in such a way as that people can understand what we're speaking about, what we're talking about, including ourselves. So therefore, it's advised we speak according to our realization and according to what's understandable to people. Otherwise, we'll confuse others and we'll confuse ourselves too. For instance, we can give a class, tell so many different things which have nothing to do with the purport, have nothing to do with the golden life, have nothing to do with anyone's life. But we like to hear ourselves speak, so we think we're doing a good job. We tell a few pastimes of Krishna that people completely beyond their comprehension, And they appreciate it because it reminds them of their material existence, their pastimes of the material existence. So we should speak in such a way as that we understand what we're talking about, we have some experience of it, and others too. And most of us haven't gone beyond the fact that we're not this body, or the fact that there is a God, and he's not an old man sitting on a clutching the earth. He's a coward boy in Vrindavan. So those two things are the essence of knowledge. We're not this body and Krishna is God. So that we should try to explain to people. If they can't understand Krishna as the Supreme Person, usually we should try to explain as the Creator rather than as the coward boy in Vrindavan to people at first. Then at least we should try to explain to them that they're not their body, they're eternal. There's a process of elevation to the mode of goodness where they can understand they're eternal. And the process is, the holy name will do that better than anything else. So at least if they can understand that, take up the chanting, then they'll get a direction in life, which is valid. And the last one is to not have complete faith in the holy name, maintain material attachments, even while chanting the holy name. So, or become inattentive while chanting. So that we have to try to do. That will develop our spiritual intelligence. Try to, because the difference between material life and spiritual life is material life, our intelligence goes down to the three modes of material nature. And therefore our mind becomes, we start remembering the three things in the three modes of nature. And when we're chanting and trying to pay attention, it means we're using our intelligence to elevate our mind to the spiritual platform of experience. And although we may not experience that right away, but if we just chant and listen to the holy name, then we're at least on the spiritual level of existence. We've made that far. And then eventually, remembrance of Krishna will appear in our memory and we'll be able to feel his presence. But at least we should understand when we're chanting the difference between being our mind, our intelligence sinking into the normal modes of nature that we're used to, or being elevated to the spiritual platform of experience. So that's what the chanting can do for us. It can bring us to the spiritual level if we pay attention. And if we don't pay attention, then according to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we might eventually be cultivating the weeds, which will choke our Bhakti Lata beach. So I'll stop there. Thank you.